This is the Spencer Wilson Show.
Travis Ishikawa hits one in the right. The Giants win the pennant.
Trying to fight up a shot. Block, loose ball, 1 second. And Nevada wins.
Oh! Oh!
This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series. Bryant makes the play. It's over. And the Cubs have finally won it all.
Balotelli.
Here's your host, Spencer Wilson.
What's up, Reno? Good afternoon. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. This is the Spencer Wilson Show. I'm your host, Spencer Wilson. Sean Cloud on the board.
How's everyone doing today?
We have Haley also in the studio. She's riding along. If only it was as cool as riding along with police officers. Maybe it would be maybe a little more fun. But fun show on the docket today. Got a lot to talk about. We'll talk NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Finals, World Cup coming up. We have Aces hitting coach Jason Camilli on the broadcast today. Starting with some local news, though. We'll get in some local headlines here before we get into all the conversations. Some fun stuff happening around the local area here. We'll start with this fun story from the Nevada baseball team. They will add another weapon to its coaching staff for next season. Abe Alvarez, a World Series champion with the Boston Red Sox back in 2004. I like to refer to them as the Curse Enders. He was drafted in 2003 by the Red Sox and was drafted out of Long Beach State, where he was the winningest left-handed pitcher in school history when he left with a 23-5 record. He's also legally blind in his left eye. So, interesting perspective there from a player standpoint. Also makes it all the more impressive that he was the fastest player to move from single A to the majors in the Red Sox organization. Not an easy organization to make your way through. And then Wooster High School got to celebrate something very cool. 11 different athletes will go on to play college sports. Four of them will play football. Two will play baseball, one of which is playing both football and baseball in the area. And then the other sports included are softball, soccer, and swimming. So all very cool for Wooster to celebrate those 11 athletes. And then Sparks High School will be getting some new equipment for the upcoming football season. The program had 24 helmets that were deemed unsafe to use in competition, and next season they would have lost about 15 more. The team needed at least $6,000 to replace the equipment, and due to a fundraiser the school put on and numerous donations from around the area, the school was able to raise $40,000 to buy new helmets, new shoulder pads, as well as starting a fund for future needs. So a lot of good coming out of that. And one last story here. This is really cool. Grant Booth, who is a member of the Nevada golf team, has been given a very cool opportunity. Chris Hoff, the director of the Barracuda Championship, has offered Grant a spot on that PGA Tour event. Booth had a great career here at Nevada, where he shot the lowest stroke average in Nevada school history during his junior and senior year. He earned an All-Mountain West selection his senior year, all while helping Nevada break a rather long NCAA tournament drought and even reaching 20th in the country in the Arnold Palmer Cup rankings.
Wow.
So very cool. Those are some news and stuff from around the local area. Now let's talk about a team, another local team, the 1868.
The soccer team.
The soccer team. They have been rolling as of late. They got off to a slow start, not uncommon. This is kind of the same way the season went last year. They got out to a rather slow start. I believe they lost the first three of the five games last year while drawing the other two. This year they have won. I think they lost actually their first three of their first four games. Yeah, lost three of their first four games. You give them a break on the first one, though, that 3-4 loss to Swope Park because it was basically in a blizzard. And how? I mean, you can't really judge a team's efficiency level in a blizzard. It's all just kind of a free-for-all.
Can't see the ball, that's for sure.
Yeah, hopefully they were using a different color ball because you're not going to see a white soccer ball in all that mess. But they went to Vegas then and drew 1-1. They lost two in a row, both shutout losses here at home to Phoenix Rising FC 1-0 and to the Colorado Switchbacks 2-0. So, or I'm sorry, 4-0. Pardon me. But again, that Ian Russell offense that we saw last year, it took him a couple games just to get players to gel with each other. And now we're seeing that again this year. And they lost a weapon or two off that front offensive line from last year to this year. So we didn't know how long it was going to take for this offense to kind of get up and moving. But now that they have, they've been on a tear. Because that last loss came, I believe, April 14th, and they haven't lost a game since.
No, they did. They lost May 23rd.
Against who?
Sacramento Republic.
I think you might be looking at the wrong schedule, man. Okay. They didn't have a game on May 23rd.
Oh, maybe not. You're right. Says 2018.
Well, this is the beauty of live radio. Let's figure it out.
Yeah.
I'm looking at they had a game May 2nd, May 5th. May 8th, or no, May 9th, May 12th, 19th, and 26th.
There was the 16th as well, and there was the 23rd as well.
USL.com and the 1868 FC's team website have two different schedules,
games.
Apparently, so we're finding this out in live time. Isn't that fun? I don't know how that actually happens. How does the USL, the website that's in charge of the entire league, how are they missing two games off a team's schedule?
I don't know. It's happened before.
That's interesting. Well, regardless, they've been very good since that last loss in April, winning a majority of their games. That is a fact. They stand right now currently in sixth place in the Western Conference, and of course, top eight make the playoffs. They made the playoffs last year. I believe it was in the sixth spot. So just trying to continue to compete in what's a tough Western Conference right now, but they're all still relatively close. Real Monarchs, they're kind of in front of everyone. They have 31 points right now in first place, and that's kind of the head-on leader of the Western Conference, because then you get to Phoenix Rising FC with 24 points in second, and then it all kind of gets bunched up from there to about 9th, 10th place. So let's see what comes of it. This offense is starting to pick up. We've seen that a lot more with this team. And again, like I said earlier, with Ian Russell coached offense, it only takes a matter of time for these guys to get gelled and get used to the system. And once they do, they can really take off and be successful. And we're seeing that. And you can catch the 1868 FC this Saturday, tomorrow, as they are home. If the schedule I'm looking at is correct, Sean, we can double check here. They're playing Fresno FC tomorrow night?
Yes, they're playing Fresno.
Here at home?
Yes.
7:30 p.m.?
It says 7:15.
Okay, 7:15. Maybe that's when the pregame fun
starts.
Yeah,
when everything starts getting wild.
Just get there at 7. Just get there at 7. Be safe. Get there at 7. But support the 1868 FC. Because we are down to basically two teams now in Reno.
Yep.
If you don't count the Wolfpack.
Yeah, if you don't count the Wolfpack and you count AAA teams, then we just have soccer and baseball. Maybe hockey later on.
Yeah, hockey might be coming, but we'll wait and see. It's still rather far down the road. But like I said, Saturday, get out there and support the 1868 as they just try to get back to the playoffs and see what they can make happen. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Jason Camilli is on the phone from the Reno Aces. You're listening to the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show.
Welcome back inside the studio. Yesterday morning, I got the opportunity to talk to Jason Camilli, who is the hitting coach for the Reno Aces, and this is how that conversation sounded. Joining me on the phone now, Reno Aces hitting coach Jason Camilli. Coach, thanks for taking some time to talk to me this morning. How is everything going in Nashville?
My pleasure. Everything's going pretty good. I got off to a good start, game one here. Ran into a starter last night that was able to execute all of his pitches and really made it hard for us. But going back tonight and see if we can't get that series win.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, before we get to Nashville, I want to talk a little bit about the Vegas series you guys wrapped up earlier this week. Really solid series kind of all the way around offensively. You guys out-hit Vegas in the last four games of that five-game series. Key to this team's success at the plate against the 51s.
I think the biggest thing is you know, hitting's really contagious. So that's kind of one thing that we're really striving to do on a consistent basis. And the Vegas series, pretty much all nine guys did that. And, you know, everyone's swinging the bat with confidence. They're loose. They're relaxed. They're executing their game plan as far as approach goes and stuff and swinging good pitches. And it just all kind of came together in that series.
And one player that really kind of caught my eye in that series was Christopher Negron. He hit in all five games. He had multiple hits in four out of those five games. What makes him such a dangerous hitter at the plate?
He's a veteran guy. He's been around. He's one of those guys that doesn't necessarily panic when things aren't going well his way. And he just really trusts the process, trusts his own strengths and everything. And, it just all kind of culminated in that series for him. He's able to hit multiple pitches. He has sneaky power to the opposite field, and he can react to pitches inside. So, and he really had a solid series there, and everything was really going good for him.
And I've been curious, when you guys go from a place like Reno, which is at such high elevation, and you go to a place like Nashville, which is a lot lower of an elevation, does that play a whole lot in how players approach a pitcher at the plate, or does it not really affect the way you mentally approach an at-bat?
I don't think it really affects the way you approach the at-bat mentally. Everyone's going up there trying to do damage on their pitch. If they just happen to catch it right in Reno, with the wind and the way it blows out in the high elevation, it just happens to leave the yard. When you come to places like this with a little bit of heavy air and stuff like that, you really don't change your approach. You're going up there trying to square up your pitch every single at-bat.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is you guys are on a bit of a shorter road trip right now. Only seven games. You're in Nashville, and you'll go to Memphis after this. When you guys are on a road trip, is there any kind of specific exercise or drill that you have these guys do since they're not kind of in their own bed, in their own home day to day, to kind of keep them sharp at the plate? Or is that not something you really have to worry about?
Being up here, I mean, these guys know themselves. They know what they need to do. We pretty much keep to the same type of schedule format that we do when we're at home, as far as, the amount of swings that they take, the early work, to where pretty much everything's just the same. It's just pushed back an hour because we're on the road and we're the visiting team.
And then you guys are in Nashville right now. You'll go to Memphis here after this game wraps up. You've had a lot of success against Memphis, 8-4 since 2015 and 3-1 in Memphis. What's the key to keeping these bats going against this pitching staff?
I think it's just the same thing. We have to, go out there and compete, all nine guys throughout the whole lineup. Everyone's got to be in sync with that. One guy fails, whatever it may be, we hand it over to the next guy. Just continue trying to keep that train moving, so to speak, as far as the lineup goes. And just do what we can and just make it hard. If a pitcher's on, we have to grind and do what we can and just try and battle, see more pitches, hopefully expand him a little bit, and wait for that guy to make a mistake so that we can jump on him.
We've seen, obviously, in the minor league system, there's a lot of players going up a level, down a level. When a player comes into the Aces, is there a certain way about their batting stance, the way they approach the plate, that you look for? Or is it just kind of read the player and then coach him based on how he comes into the team?
Normally, from my perspective, and I think pretty much the way that we do things, when you get a new player, you let him play. And, then you let them build up some at-bats and stuff. And, obviously if there's something that potentially needs to be adjusted, whether that be mechanical or just necessarily just approach or thought process, then we go ahead and handle that at that point in time. But when they first get to us, it's let the guy play, see what he can do, and then just kind of base everything off of that.
Gotcha. Well, Jason, thank you very much for, again, taking some time with me this morning. Good luck in the game against Nashville tonight and then against Memphis. And we look forward to seeing you guys back here on the 13th.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
All right, Jason, have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Big thank you again to Jason Camilli for taking some time there to talk with me. So that was obviously yesterday morning, so they hadn't finished their series against Nashville yet. But good news is that they won that game, and they won that series 2-1. That makes it two series wins in a row now for Reno. And really, Sean and I have talked about it this year. Just got to put little things together. Worry about winning a series or just winning a game and just put a couple games together, win a series. Now they've got two series that they've won back-to-back. They beat Vegas 3-2, were able to win the last game of that series, beat Nashville 2-1, won the last game of that series. And anytime you can end a series on a win, just keep that momentum going to the next series, the next opponent, whether you're at home or on the road, it's going to be good things for you. And game two and game three were exciting. They were fun. But man, game one had some moments, really mostly at the plate. We have one here from Burrito. This is later, like sixth, seventh inning. I think you said, right, Sean?
About seventh or eighth inning.
Seventh or eighth inning. So here's how this one played out.
No balls and one strike. Target set up away. Here comes the pitch. Slider swinging a soft flare, right field. And that's going to fall, a base hit. Burrito grabs it. He's going to throw to the plate. There's going to be a play, the tag, and out at the plate. They got him. And Mateo has been thrown out of the game by the home plate umpire Fields. Mateo held up at third base. He thought Burrito was going to catch the ball. It dropped in on a hop. Burrito picked it up. He gunned it to the plate. Perez swiped on Mateo going by. Fields called him out. Mateo jumped up, slammed his helmet down, and was immediately ejected.
Always a little extra drama when there's immediate ejection involved. That's always fun.
It's always fun. It gets everyone going.
Yeah.
Everyone likes fighting.
Oh, yeah. And then later in the game, if you thought that was dramatic, ninth inning, game on the line. How's this for drama?
Here's the stretch, and the 0-1 to Boyd. Fastball swung on, hit to left, slicing down the line towards the corner. That's going to fall. It's a fair ball. Fuentes has it. Taylor coming to third. He's being waved around. Here's the relay throw to the plate. Perez Duane grabs the baseball, applies the tag, out at the plate, and the ball game is over. Taylor is thrown out at the plate, and the Aces win it. Reno 4 and Nashville 3. A drive hit into the left field corner. Fuentes cut it off. He threw it back in. Vargas cut the throw. His throw to Perez was on a hop. Michael, like he was blocking a pitch, dropped down to his knees, cradled the baseball, and applied the tag on Taylor sliding in.
So you can't get much more dramatic than the final out happening at the plate when the team is trying to tie it up to go to extra innings. But those are the kind of games we've seen, and it's good to see the Aces finally start to come out on top of these games.
Yeah, they're looking a lot better than they did in the start of the game. They definitely came through coming into the second half of the season being like, all right, we need to actually do something, and we need to prove that we belong, which is always good to see.
Yeah, and last night's win, kind of a special win. It was the 700th regular season win for the Aces franchise, so that's pretty special. Yeah, number 700 in the regular season. And Kevin Crone, even though he didn't know it would be a 700th win, decided to celebrate his own way during the game because he went off.
Oh, yeah,
he went absolutely
off.
Two home runs, yeah, as you said, four RBIs, and that's because both home runs were two-run shots.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just incredible. It was his first Triple-A multi-home run game of his career, and he's also tied now with Anthony Recker and Cody Decker with 8 home runs on the team.
Oh, wow.
And in my notes, I wrote down Recker and Decker, and that could be a really good construction name.
Is this just a dynamic duo? Just have them go back-to-back. All right, we got Recker, and now it's Decker.
Yeah. And then so they just finished up a 3-game series in Nashville. They're now off to Memphis for a 4-game stint. And this is a team the Aces have done very, very well against. They are 8-4 against Memphis since 2015. And since the Aces' inception in 2009, they are 24-13 against Memphis. So this is a team that, again, coming off 2 series wins, they could put a third one together. And if you can put 2 series wins back-to-back on the road, I mean, before you return home, that's gonna make you feel even better just about going into this, getting closer to the second half of the season. And, of course, after that 4-game stint, they will come back home for a 7-game homestand where they will play Iowa. They'll start off with Iowa and then Omaha before they go back out on the road. So, again, it's all just about kind of creeping your way back into it and just seeing what happens, really. Because, I mean, with the season as long as baseball, April, March, you don't want to get too freaked out. You take your losses, you take your wins, you kind of examine what's going on, you make those adjustments, and then, of course, you get to Memorial Day, which is the first real gut punch of the season. We talked about that last week, and really start to diagnose. We're into a stage now where you really got to start putting series wins together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a stage now where you can go back and forth, but if you fall apart like the Aces kind of did earlier in the season, there's no time to recover anymore. You're in the recovery stage. You have to recover now.
When, all in the series now to get back into that playoff run. But they have a good schedule leading up to it. Like you said, they've done very good against Memphis. Iowa's and Omaha, they've done very good against them in previous years. So coming into this, I think this month will be a good month. June is going to be Aces' power month this month. That's what I think.
Well, we're going to cross our fingers and hope. They got the talent. We know that. And, of course, don't miss a game. with Ryan Radke. You wouldn't want to miss a game. And they will start their series against Memphis tonight. First pitch is coming up here in about 2 or so hours, so don't miss that, about 2.5 or so hours.
Yeah, 5:05, pregame's at 4:50.
I keep thinking of tomorrow's start time, which is like 4:35. I keep thinking of that.
Oh, you're not thinking about the 10:05 start time on Monday?
Oh, man, as much as I'm looking forward to that, I'm going to be up anyway. I'll get up at 5 to do traffic in the morning, so I'll just hang out here. But that's kind of how the news looks around in the local area. But we're going to take a break and talk about some NBA and NHL finals. But before we do that, Sean, we got something for the people.
We have 2 VIP tickets to the World Fighting Championship, plus $20 in food vouchers.
Ooh.
So that's always nice, at the Greater Nevada Field on June 23rd.
There you go. So you can be caller number 9, gets those tickets. The phone number is 775-333-0945. Caller 9 gets them. We're talking NBA and NHL finals after the break. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show.
All right, welcome back inside the studio. Before we get to Stanley Cup Finals, before we get to NBA Finals, let's take a look at some news and notes from around the national circuit, I guess you can call it. Circuit, just papers, headlines, however you want to phrase it. Brian Colangelo, if you've been following this with the 76ers, has resigned from his position as the general manager of the 76ers after it was determined that his wife was the one in charge of the burner accounts on Twitter. Again, these accounts were used to discuss personal information regarding players' medical information, possible trades that didn't go through, criticizing players' off-court behavior, and putting down former Sixers head man Sam Hinkie. So once this all came out, obviously the law firms and whoever that were in charge of these basically said that Colangelo didn't do his duty in keeping everything close to the vest and properly protecting this information on the team. So he has resigned, and Brett Brown, the coach, will oversee basketball operations for now. And then Florida State wins the college softball national championship, beating Washington in 2 games, bringing home not only the program's first national championship, but the first championship for the ACC as well. So,
congratulations, girls.
And that's big. The Pac-12 and the SEC really dominate college softball. The Pac-12, they have like 23 national championships in college softball. So it's good to see somebody else, another conference, take home the gold. And this came out recently. Terrell Owens has declined his invitation to appear at the NFL enshrinement ceremony for the Hall of Fame this year. Owens said that he will reveal at a later date where and when he will celebrate his induction into the Hall of Fame. He was a finalist in 2016 and 17, of course, when he didn't make it in. He, of course, just lashed out at the voters and everyone in the Hall of Fame, saying, "How can you not let me in?" And they let him in, and he doesn't show up.
Just a typical thing to do.
That's typical, T.O., right?
I'm
going to
point my finger at every single one of you, but I'm not going to show up.
All right, T.O., you're in. All right, see ya. But he's being inducted along with players like Ray Lewis, Randy Moss, Brian Urlacher, and Brian Dawkins. Very talented group of players going in. Owens is 8th all-time in receptions with 1,078, 2nd in receiving yards with 15,934, and 3rd in touchdowns with 153. He played for 5 teams in his NFL career, most notably San Francisco, Philadelphia, and Dallas. Like, we all remember those fun years. And totally forgot that he played for Buffalo and Cincinnati. No recollection of that, really,
at all.
I
remember Cincinnati.
So Buffalo was in between, apparently, Dallas and Cincinnati sometime.
Maybe he was there for
probably a game
or something like that.
Then one other thing, a couple of championship opportunities in the works for tomorrow. Sloane Stephens will play world number 1 Simona Halep in the final of the French Open tomorrow morning, which I am going to record because I believe it's 6 a.m. like Eastern Standard. I'm not getting up at 3 a.m. to watch this. I appreciate tennis. I appreciate what it takes to play tennis at a professional level. I prefer sleep at 3 a.m. But I will record it and watch it and hope that she wins. And then also tomorrow, we may not have to wait another 37 years for a Triple Crown winner, because Justify will run in the Belmont Stakes tomorrow for a chance to not only win the Triple Crown, but to stay undefeated as a horse.
Justify.
I mean, it's a good name for an undefeated horse.
I'm gonna name my first kid that.
That would be Justify Cloud. That's a pretty.
It's a good name.
That's
right?
A pretty good name, man. They're gonna think he belongs to some kind of celebrity with that name.
Yeah,
right along with Blue Ivy and whoever else.
I'm not related to this guy at all. It's good.
So those are kind of the big news and notes from around the world of sports. But now let's talk about what ended last night and what will end tonight. We'll start with last night as the Washington Capitals finally capture the Stanley Cup. 43 seasons they've been playing hockey in Washington. They've made the playoffs 28 times, and they finally bring home a title. It's the most playoff appearances before winning your first championship in all major four sports, being the NFL, NBA, MLB, and NHL. And, man, really, it's if you split the series up, it's incredible. Because you look at Game 1, and Vegas looked almost unstoppable.
They really did.
I mean, it's 6-4, so they allowed 4 goals, and that 6th one was an empty netter. But watching that game, it was all Vegas. I mean, it was. I mean, from whether they were in their own zone to Washington's zone, I mean, they were beating everyone to the puck. They were playing that game 1. They played the same way they had played the previous 3 rounds.
Right.
But in the next 4 games, it just a switch got turned off, and I think it gets to that point where. We've said it before. This is a team with limited finals experience. Fleury has 2 championships. I think James Neal was on Nashville teams last year when they played Pittsburgh in the final. But this isn't a team with a lot of finals experience. They have a lot of playoff experience. But when you make that initial run, when you get to the finals, it's a whole different atmosphere. There's the first 3 rounds, and then there's the finals. And I think when you get this team that isn't used to that atmosphere, it's going to weigh on them. And I think this was such an incredible run that when you win game 1, you're on such a high, and then you constantly get rammed into the ground the next couple games. They scored 6 goals, Vegas did, in that first game. They didn't score more than 3 the next 4, and they scored 3 in last night's game. But they lost 3-2 in game 2, 3-1 in game 3, and 6-2 in game 4. So you just saw this offense, this team that was literally beating Washington all over the ice, just start to get flat-footed. Mm-hmm. And it was incredible. I mean, pretty much all the goals Washington scored were on the backside. There was no backside help. Fleury was going to have to make saves that no mortal human could make. I mean, it was just, you can't do that. You can't do that to your goaltender every single game. Mm-hmm. I mean, it easily could have been 15-1 every game because they were just constantly leaving the backside of that net open. And you can't do that, not when you got players like Ovechkin, Oshie, and everybody else trying to put the puck in the back of the net. So it was disappointing. I think we all would have liked to have seen Vegas win just in the pure story of it. Mm-hmm. A team in their first year, out of nowhere. Not only are they the third best team in their conference, best team in their division, but now they would have won the Stanley Cup. That would have been very impressive. I didn't think Washington was going to do it in Vegas.
I didn't think it was going to happen, especially with those openers that Vegas would give out.
Man. So good.
They were so good.
Yeah, interesting. Did you see the opener last night?
Yeah.
Did you watch that?
I heard my mom had texted me and was like, did you see that opener? How did they make sound effects for water? I was like, Mom, you literally just said what it was. They made a sound effect for the water.
I thought it was interesting. I don't know if maybe I've missed this in other games before, but the Knight took a shot. Did you see that? Usually they do like a pregame little battle. They have like a guy in a golden suit of armor. Guy comes out with the flag of who else. They battle. The Knight beats him. But last night, they were fighting. The Knight kind of missed him. He whiffed, and the guy caught him in the back. Oh. And
is why they lost, guys. Because right
then
there.
The archers came out, and they had to help him. Usually the archers come out first, and then the Knight comes out.
Yeah, they
out.
Like shoot out.
So it was very – something was off last night. And like, I don't know. It was very weird. Maybe they kind of expected to lose, maybe? I don't know. It was weird.
Maybe they were like, our first 2 didn't help us. Let's try having them stab us in the back, and maybe we'll win. Maybe that'll
please,
give our team a little
bit. Please stab
of
us in the back. Yeah, exactly. It was disappointing. But you know who is happy that Washington won? All the Vegas sports books.
Oh yeah,
because they did not have to pay people millions and millions of dollars. Because I think there was something like 100 tickets at least that were still that people had bought back before the season had started. That had Vegas at 500-1 odds. I mean, that's a lot of money to 10 different people, man, or 100 different people, or whoever had those tickets. So that ended last night. Hats off to Washington. Ovechkin took the Conn Smythe MVP trophy. Well earned.
Wasn't there something like Dwayne Wade or something said, like if the Knights were to win, he'd buy everyone a jersey who retweeted it? Or was that for the basketball?
No, that's from basketball. Right. I think it may have been an Ohio State wide receiver. Someone in that area did say if Cleveland wins, then I'll buy everybody in the state of Ohio or something like that a jersey.
Yeah, whoever like retweeted and he was already at a million retweets and each jersey is like $30. And you're like, he's like, all right, don't win, guys.
Good luck.
You're my best friend. Don't win.
but good news for him is he's not going to have to buy people jerseys.
Exactly.
Because the NBA Finals are going to end tonight. It's only game four. I'm aware of that. Don't think I'm not aware of the series record. But in my opinion, honestly, Cleveland could be up 2-1 right now. They could have won game one. I mean, blame J.R. Smith all you want. They quit in overtime.
Oh, yeah.
You got 5 minutes to play.
They only scored 7 points in overtime on that first game.
Yeah, I mean,
so.
I get that you're playing one of the best teams in the history of the NBA, but that team flat out quit in game one. And they could have won game three. They could have. I mean, of course, Kevin Durant then showed up. And he was getting set up, and that – he hit a late game three that pretty much just, and you can see the look on his face too. And if you watch the game, watch the highlight. He hits it from deep, and then he just turns around, just stone cold face.
Yeah, I'm a baller. Peace.
Yeah, I drained your team, drowned him. Game three. Bye bye.
I feel like if I were to do it, I'd look right into LeBron's eyes and just be like, "You see what happened?"
Well,
here.
I'm not sure. I think LeBron may have been the one that was guarding him.
Oh yeah, we'd have to watch it again. Maybe LeBron turned around and was like, "I'm done."
Maybe. But. That's, again, game one, game three, their best chance. They didn't do it. I don't see them. I mean, unless Golden State just wants to win it in at home in game five. But I don't see Steve Kerr telling this team to take their foot off the gas pedal anytime soon. So it's going to end tonight. Golden State will be going back home to the Bay Area without Cleveland following them.
How many points do you think they'll win by?
Oh, man. I don't think it's going to be as much. I think it'll be the closest game of the series. I think Cleveland will go down really fighting hard, mm-hmm. but they're going to go down. But I think it'll be less than 10 points. I think they'll at least make it respectable in single digits. But
I would hope so. I'm going to say about an 8 point. That's about their average
right now
is about 8 points. So I'm going to go with about 8, maybe like 108 to 100 maybe.
We'll see. And then, of course, what does it say about LeBron? I mean, if this is his last game in Cleveland, if this is it, if he's going somewhere else, it was a playoff run of so many mixed emotions, I feel like, because you had the whole Cavaliers season. You had the first half of the season, everyone thought, oh, he's repaired with Dwayne Wade. Mm-hmm. They're going to kind of cook up that Miami Heat magic now in Cleveland, and they fell flat on their face. Like, they didn't even make it out of the gate. They tripped on a rock and just ate it coming out of the starting gate. So, of course, they go through half the season. They dump them. They bring in pretty much an entirely new team for the second half. And it's just LeBron basically carrying a bunch of younger players and mid-career veterans.
Yeah,
and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's really just off of that JR like turnaround. How do you not know the score at all? Like, you were how? No, there's nothing. Like, if no, sit on the bench, you're done. Just there's the door.
And that's kind of been, I feel like, the underlying frustration that LeBron has had every year, even before he went to Miami. Just whenever he's been in Cleveland, there's been that baseline frustration
mm-hmm.
of. Because he knows what this city is expecting of him, and he got him a championship, but there's always going to be that, yeah, well, you won one, and you got this team to five.
Mm-hmm.
So you're 1-4 in Cleveland. And it always depends. I was listening to ESPN Radio earlier this week, and how do you want to talk about LeBron? You want to talk about LeBron, the guy who's only won three championships, or the guy that's now played 9 NBA Finals, 8 straight NBA Finals? Which picture do you want to paint? That's really what it's going to come down to. Because mm-hmm. that conversation of him versus MJ will never go away. It's always going to be there. It's been beaten into the ground again and again. I mean, it's to the point where it's just mixed in with the dirt at this point now.
Well, I mean, if you look at, I think it was game threes, like, you know, Cavs versus Golden State. Michael Jordan's in that picture. If you look at it, we were talking about it. He's in there, Michael Jordan, and then LeBron's in the middle, and then Curry's on the other side. I'm like, why is Michael Jordan even in this picture right now?
Because he just shows up, man. It's the finals. He just shows up. He's like Waldo when it comes around to the finals. Like, just find him. He's there somewhere. but, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what it is. There's been a lot of talks. Will they go to Houston maybe and team up with this being LeBron, of course, mm-hmm. and team up with Harden or CP3? Will they go to L.A. and maybe team up with Paul George and Lonzo Ball? I mean, it's all speculation, and we'll see what comes of it. But if it does end, if this is his last game in Cleveland, his last game in a Cavaliers uniform, I just hope it's respectful. If they lose by 30 points, I'm not going to feel bad for him. Mm-hmm. But I'm just gonna have that kind of I wish it would have been a little better for you.
Let's just hope that he has the game of his life. Yeah. I don't even care about the team anymore. Just him.
He's had the series to remember.
He really
this
has.
Team, first off, wouldn't even be in this series if it wasn't for him. And nope. My gosh, 51 points, I think in game one or game two, he's put up at least like 40 something in the other games. I mean, he's had a series that would blow most people away.
Oh yeah, I mean, he's carrying the team. This is just obvious.
Oh yeah. So, and I'd imagine that maybe he, like Kevin Durant, would like to go to a place where he doesn't have to solely do that.
Exactly.
Because Durant and Westbrook, when they were in Oklahoma City, basically two guys on the same team that were trying to carry a team on their own. And I think that's what kind of led to the friction. And so Kevin Durant went to a place where he had Curry, he had Draymond, he had Klay. He didn't have to be the one guy carrying this team. LeBron probably wants to look to a place where he doesn't have to be the one carrying the whole load.
I think it'd be fun to see him on the Rockets, honestly. I think that'd be a power combo.
It would make the West so interesting.
It'd be so much fun to watch. I mean, everyone knows I wanted the Rockets in Boston to go in the first place. So.
I think every team in the East is hoping he goes to Houston. Just get out of the Eastern Conference, man.
Just go.
Let us just play our own basketball here in the East. But, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. It's all speculation, and we'll just see what happens. But that's the world of hockey and basketball. But starting in a week is my favorite tournament in all of sports. And we're going to talk about that next. It's the FIFA World Cup. That's coming up next on the Spencer Wilson Show here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show. It's time for my two Spence words.
Yes, it is, Anne. God, 3 for 3. She's always right. It's amazing. I don't know how she does it. But like I said before the break, in 1 week, my favorite tournament in sports kicks off, and it's the FIFA World Cup. Now, if you're asking yourself, Spencer, that's weird. Why is that your favorite tournament in the world? It's soccer. We all know how this country feels about soccer.
No one likes it.
Especially, well, and you know what frustrates me about that is that, yeah, our men's team struggles, and I get that, and it's like the whole reason this country like revolted against this World Cup because our team's not in it, so why should we care? But no one wants to celebrate our women's team.
That's true.
It makes me so angry. When we talk about soccer in this country, no one wants to talk about the fact that our women's team is the defending World Cup champions. No one wants to talk about that. And it drives me crazy because they work just as hard, and they're actually succeeding, and we don't want to talk about that. However, that's not what this Two Spence Worth is about. It's just about the World Cup. I love it. I just love the idea of countries, whether as big as Russia or the U.S. or as small as Costa Rica and Belgium, just get the best players they can get together and put them in a 2 to 3. I mean, that's the thing about this tournament. It takes 2 to 3 years. I mean, the part coming up in a week is just the final 32 teams. But every single confederation, South America, Europe, Asia, Africa, North America, and the Caribbean, all have 2 to 3 years of qualifying to get here. Most of it's 3 years. Europe's the only one with 2 years, and that's because the other 2 years, they're qualifying and playing in the European Championship.
Right.
So that's the only reason. But for everyone else, it's 3 years worth of qualifying to get to this point. So that alone is amazing. But it's just the fact that if you look at this team, these are the 20 or so best players that an entire country has to offer. And there's no real tournament out there, I feel like, that can really compare to that. I mean, you know, multiple years, players going on and off, a coach could leave. You could have 3 different coaches in a whole span of qualifying to the final tournament. I mean, it's just crazy the length that this puts teams through. And that's why I mean, I'm not a huge soccer fan. I watch MLS. I follow the 1868.
Don't lie. You're a diehard fan.
I'm not diehard. I don't know if I would call myself diehard. I do research going into the World Cup because, like I said, I love it. But going to lay out some predictions. I'll tweet these out next week, too. You can follow me on Twitter at @MyTwoSpenceWorth. Matches up. Like I planned it. Pretty incredible. But we'll jump right into it here. So we have Group A. It's in Russia, if you didn't know that. Russia is the host this year, so they're the only team that gets to automatically qualify for it. And joining Russia in Group Arabia, Egypt, and Uruguay. I feel like most of these groups have a pretty designated – a team that looks like they'll – you know, pretty much take the cake. And Uruguay is that team to me in this group. Luis Suarez, also Edison Cavani, I believe his name is. Those are the two guys that are really going to lead this team. There's also a lot of young talent coming up, and they're a country that thrives on this stage. So I think Uruguay will win it. I think Egypt's going to get second. Because if you don't know, the top two teams from each group advance to the knockout stage, the bottom two are eliminated. So I think Uruguay will win Group A, and Egypt will follow up, primarily just because Egypt has a player, Mohamed Salah, plays for Liverpool. He played in the UEFA Champions League final. He did leave with a leg injury, but everything I've seen doesn't say that he will miss the World Cup. So I think he's going to just be able to power this Egyptian side right through the next round. Then we get to Group B. It has Portugal, Spain, Morocco, and Iran. Again, this seems pretty cut and dry to me. I think Portugal's going to win the group. Ronaldo, who I believe will be 32 at the time of this tournament, really it's his last chance in any kind of essence of his prime to win a World Cup. I think he's just going to be, I mean, really nose to the wall. He's just going to go. Pretty much like what we saw from Ovechkin in the Stanley Cup final, how every single game he was just pouring out emotion. I feel like that's what Ronaldo has to do if he wants to try and lead Portugal to any kind of success here. And then Spain gets the runner-up. I mean, honestly, take your pick. Portugal 1, Spain 2, Spain 1, Portugal 2. I think those are going to be the first two teams. I think Portugal is just going to make it out, especially coming off a European championship 2 years ago, shocking France. So I think Portugal wins it. Spain gets second. That takes us to Group C, where we have France, Australia, Peru, and Denmark. Again, I think France is a pretty outright winner here. I think they'll take it. They have just a ton of young players on their team. Very energetic. They've been described as vibrant, whatever that means in the world of soccer. But I think they're a pretty easy pick to win that group. And then really Australia, Denmark, take your pick. I'm going to go with Denmark just because, again, this is a team that really just has experience. They know what it takes to succeed in the European level as well as the world level, and that always just comes back around into play, especially as you get deeper into this tournament. Christian Eriksen, one of the premier players for Denmark, he was 18 8 years ago when he made his debut in the 2010 World Cup in South Africa, so he's only gotten better. He's scored 11 goals in 8 different games during Denmark's unbeaten streak, so watch out for France and Denmark, in my opinion, come out of Group C. And then Group D, we have Argentina, Iceland, Croatia, Nigeria. Again, pretty cut and dry to me. Argentina, I think, will win this group. Lionel Messi, same boat as Cristiano Ronaldo. He's getting close to the end of what is kind of his realm of his essence, of his prime. So if he wants to do something, I think it's been announced this will be his last World Cup regardless. So can he get this team that came so close 4 years ago in Brazil? They lost to Germany 1-0 in extra time. So can he kind of get past that and lead this team to a World Cup victory? I don't know if they will, but I'm pretty sure they'll win the group. And then really it's a toss-up between Iceland, Nigeria, and Croatia. All three very good teams. I think Nigeria might be edging ahead as favorites to other people. I'm going to pull for Iceland. I was super impressed with their appearance 2 years ago in the European Championship. They made it all the way to the quarterfinals. They upset England in the round of 16. So I think they're just going to continue to build off that. It's a little bit, again, it's still a little bit of a stretch for them to do it, to make it out of the group stage. But I'm going to be pulling for them. I think they have the talent to do it. It's just a matter of always, can they put it together when it counts? But I see Argentina winning Group D and Iceland as the runners-up. And Group E, again, pretty cut and dry, who I think is going to take this one. It's Brazil, Switzerland, Costa Rica, and Serbia. It's Brazil. How does Brazil, I don't know how they don't win this group. I mean, all respect to Switzerland, Serbia, and Costa Rica. Brazil is on a whole different level. They're just one of those teams, like the Patriots or the Yankees or the Dodgers or whoever, you know they're going to be in it. Mm-hmm. Just a matter of how far can they go with those stars. And it's all about Neymar. How will Neymar, I mean, how are they going to handle that 7-1 crushing at the hands of Germany in last year's semifinal? We'll find out. But I think Brazil wins this group. And I think Costa Rica makes it through as well. They had a good showing 4 years ago in Brazil. They were able to hang with teams like Uruguay. So this little country, I think they've gotten a lot of spunk. They got a lot of energy. And it's just a matter of, again, when you get on the field with these big teams, can you not shrink up? Stay strong, play your style of football or soccer, however you want to say it, and just compete. And we'll see if they can do that. But I think Brazil wins Group E, and Costa Rica is the runners up. And then Group F, Germany, Mexico, Sweden, South Korea. Again, I think it's pretty cut and dry. Germany, defending World Cup champions. I don't see how they don't make it through. I don't think Sweden's going to have a chance now that Ibrahimovic isn't on their squad. He's chosen not to participate. So I think that just downplays Sweden there. In South Korea, all respect to Asian countries that come out of that confederation, they just never really seem to have that step needed to compete when they get to this level.
I feel like we're like setting up a risk table right now.
You feel like it?
We're like planning a battle going into this.
It is, man. It's a battle. It's a battle that encompasses the world for a month every 4 years. So I think Germany will win the group, and I think Mexico is going to be runners-up. They always have a talented squad. They're always competitive, and I feel like, especially last year in 2014, they were banging at the door to just break the thing open, and they couldn't get that extra step, that extra goal. I think that's what's going to happen this year, especially with Chicharito now as a much of a presence as he is for that team. So I'm looking forward to it. I think Germany and Mexico will advance. And then Group G, we're almost there, so stick with me here. Belgium, Panama, Tunisia, and England all in it. Again, I think this is if you kind of see England as an initial gut check of they'll be able to stand up. They struggled in 2010. They struggled in 2014. As I mentioned, they got upset by Iceland 2 years ago in the Euro in the round of 16. So I think Belgium wins the group because I was really impressed with them 4 years ago in that World Cup. But Panama and Tunisia, I think England gets through based on literally just who else is in the group.
Mm-hmm.
I think just Panama and Tunisia just aren't going to have what it takes to keep up with England in that group stage. So Belgium wins it, and then England just kind of limps their way through that one. And that gets us to the final grouping, Group H, which is Colombia, Poland, Senegal, and Japan. And I think Colombia wins the group because, again, South America, they know what they're doing. They have a great young player. And I think Poland gets the runners-up. And those are my predictions for the final 16 teams that will stay standing.
Perfect.
Woo! All right, we got through it.
We made it.
Way to go, guys. Way to stick through there with me. I appreciate it. But that's the show. Thank you very much for listening. Sean, I have a quick shout-out here.
Oh, yeah, I want to give a quick shout-out to the MedFit Bunch in the Villages in Florida.
Thank you for your support listening to the show. You can follow me on Twitter at my two Spenceworth, Instagram as well. You can follow Sean.
@that_soundguy_Sean on Twitter and Instagram.
And we will talk to you guys next week. Have a safe weekend.
94.5 FM, KUUB FM, Sun Valley, Reno.